You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of CROI 2009, the 16th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. The conference took place in Montreal, Canada, from February 8th through February 11th, 2009.
How has things changed since the summer? Has there been any new understandings about eradication since I last interviewed you? There's been a lot of talk about the Swiss study. There's a lot of talk about the cure, about the Berlin study. There's been a lot of...
Well, you know, the Berlin's... Well, since that hasn't been published, I don't want to comment
on that.
So, but there is a big, I think, swing in sort of interest in eradication. I think people are now realizing that we need to put some energy into this and that try to do it. I mean, it's going to be very difficult. But to me, the most encouraging thing is the fact that the drugs will stop replication. Now, this is still very controversial, but, you know, unless you can stop replication, then that's never going to work.
Why is this controversial?
I think when a virologist sees a virus in the blood, they think it's got to be replicating. It's a different concept to say that the virus in the blood is coming from a cell that was infected, you know, 10 years ago, that before the patient started heart. It's conceptually very difficult for people to understand. Because the virus has a very short half-life, and, you know, you think it's being produced by a cell that just got infected, and the whole thing is a cycle that keeps going and going. So this is a very different concept, and I think people have a hard time understanding it.
So I noticed that at CROI there's going to be some studies about that there's detection in seminal fluid of HIV, and that has some risk for transmission related to the Swiss study, meaning even though there's no replication.
So there's, you know, there are latently infected cells essentially all over the body, and they, you know, pose in principle a risk for transmission even in a patient who's doing well on treatment. But I think, you know, quantitatively the risk is very low, but it's still there.
But there seems to be a reluctance by medical professionals in America to discuss this. I mean, in Europe, they're willing to talk about it.
Well,
and
you know, there are good studies of the relationship between viral load and the chance of transmission. And basically, it's just like you would think. The more virus, the more chance of transmission. When the viral load is very low, the chance is low. But you don't want to tell patients that there's no risk because, in fact, there is a risk. So I think it's a bit hard to quantitate, and that's not really my expertise. But I think that, you know, the safest thing to say is that it's a low chance, but it's, you know, you should always take precautions, right?
So a lot of people get confused when you're talking about eradication and the cure. Is there any difference?
No. Okay. Eradication means that there's no more virus.
And it will not come back.
And it will not come back, okay. Right, if you stop treatment.
What are the steps that are going to be taken, do you think, to reach that?
I mean, so there's three steps. You've stopped the virus from replicating. That's done, in my opinion. Second, you find all the reservoirs. We know at least two exist. And then third, you find a way to get rid of each one. Those are going to be very difficult to do.
Uh-huh. But how many reservoirs are there?
We don't know, but the one that we identified a long time ago in resting T cells is clearly, that's there in everybody. But there appears to be a second one, and there may be others as well. We don't know.
Is anyone currently doing that work?
A lot of groups are trying to target the latent reservoir in resting T cells with small molecules.
So is there anything going to be reported here at this conference?
Yeah, there are some studies. To be honest, I haven't had a chance to go through the book, so I don't really know.
So how close are we to this understanding? Or is it going to be like five, ten?
We're not close because we don't even know how many reservoirs there are, and we don't know how to get rid of them, any of them, yet. But, I mean, I think one optimistic recent development, not published yet by our group, but other versions published by others, is there are model systems in which you can generate these latently infected cells in a test tube. That makes a big difference because now you can begin to use those to screen for drugs that might target these reservoirs. Uh-huh. So that's what we're doing, and I think that's going to really help.
Have the reservoirs in the elite controllers of HIV been studied as well?
Well, they're hard to study because they're much smaller. And it's hard enough to study the reservoir in the patient with who's not an elite controller. And so they probably are reservoirs, but they're extremely small.
why do you think that all of a sudden, I mean, I think you mentioned before why eradication is suddenly being talked about again, but is it also because the pipeline is sort of dry?
Well, I mean, I think the pharmaceutical companies are realizing that, that they have very good drugs now, and that now, you know, we have very good drugs, but they're never going to cure anybody. They're going to keep people healthy if they take the drugs, but they're never going to cure anybody. So now I think it's natural that people would say, well, the next step is to try and go after the reservoirs.
Isn't it kind of, it's a funny moment in time because the pipeline is kind of dry, because we don't know what's going to happen with when these patients get resistant to all these new drugs.
Yeah, but see, I would say that, that resistance is not inevitable. And that's the, this whole argument whether the heart stops replication. If heart stops replication, resistance will never arise. If the patients take the drugs. Now, of course, if the patients don't take the drugs, then all bets are off. They don't take them correctly.
But so. And it seems that that's kind of a problem, an ongoing
problem.
It
certainly is a problem, but as John Miller's mentioned, resistance is decreasing, which is quite amazing in the U.S. And that's because the newer regimens are easier to take, and they don't have so many side effects, and so patients actually take them. Now, what will happen 5 years from now? Who knows? 10 years from now? It's hard to say. We have a new way of evaluating the antiviral activity of drugs, and it allows us to sort of estimate how well the drugs are going to control replication in vivo. In this analysis, really the protease inhibitors have an extraordinarily high, certain of the protease inhibitors, extraordinarily high potential. On the order of 10 logs, 10 billion-fold inhibition. But for two classes of drugs, the nucleoside analogs and the integrase inhibitors, there's an intrinsic limitation that keeps those drugs from reaching that same high level of inhibition. The rapid drop in viral load seen by patients on raltegravir is really just a consequence of the fact that the drug acts later in the life cycle. Drugs acting later in the life cycle automatically produce a more rapid drop in viral load, even if they're not any more potent than other drugs.
How do you explain the head-to-head comparison trials between raltegravir and efavirenz?
Well, I think it's a consequence of the fact that the drugs used in combination, and in both of those combinations, what we call the inhibitory potential is sufficient to completely stop replication. And once you've stopped replication, it really doesn't matter if you have a regimen that has the ability to stop, let's say, 14 logs of replication. If there's only 6 logs occurring, then it doesn't really matter. So both of those combinations, you know, reach the limit where they control all the replication that's occurring. But in terms of raw antiviral activity, raltegravir doesn't, all of the integrase inhibitors have this intrinsic limitation that puts them, in terms of raw antiviral activity, below the best protease inhibitors.
So you think this has implications for care then?
I think this is a basic science finding that the significance of which has to be explored.
And this was published where?
Well, we have a paper in Nature Medicine and in PNAS.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thank you for listening to this report from CROI 2009. For more coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/CROI2009.